Thanks to digital devices, we're used to being online constantly, and through email, Twitter, and Facebook, we're used to being in touch as well. But a group of Washington Post reporters bucked this trend when they unplugged from the internet for a week. Enterprise editor Mark Fisher asked the eight reporters on his staff to go offline for 5 days. No texting, no email, no browsing, to see how it would change their work and even their relationships. And I'm very pleased that this experiment brings Mark Fisher back to our show, along with one of his reporters, Mike Rosenwald. Hello and welcome.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mark, what kinds of stories do these reporters normally cover?
Oh, a little bit of everything. Everything from some investigative work, longer profiles, features. We try to call the enterprise team because we're not doing the breaking news, but we're doing the more ambitious kinds of reporting that try to show why we still have newspapers and why we still need newspapers. And it's deeper, more analytical kind of work, and work that takes a lot of reporting, which these days is done more digitally than it used to be.
But if they were doing the news of the moment, you probably could have asked them to do this. Could you describe the projects? What did you ask your reporters to do?
Basically, I said, let's live our lives and do our work exactly as if it were, say, 1980. And so we were not going to use the internet, not going to do any browsing. Several of the reporters on the staff are deeply into Twitter and every gadget that's come down the pike. And so I said, we're going off all of those gadgets and we're going to do reporting the old-fashioned way. Shoe leather reporting, telephone reporting, not because they're inherently better, but because they're different. And you get, there is a certain kind of reporting that requires you to listen hard and dig in documents and go out and walk the streets. And you're going to get different relationships with people when you do that kind of reporting. You're going to really feel the story in a different way than the kind of more distance relationship you might have if you're dealing through email or electronic messages of one sort or another. That was the theory. And also, I just wanted to see how it would toy with everyone's lives and all the expectations that their sources and relatives and friends have of them in this world where we're expected to be on 24/7.
Were any of them working as reporters before email became the norm?
Yeah, a few of them. It's a fairly young staff, but some of them do remember those days, and I don't pretend that they look back fondly on those days at all. Several of the folks on the staff are diehard techno lovers, technophiles, but there we do have the requisite curmudgeon or two on the staff, and the are folks who said this isn't going to make any difference in my life. I don't use any of this stuff, but in fact, of course, they do because it's so deeply woven into our lives these days.
Well, Mike, I'm sure you spoke with the other guys on the staff. What were their reactions and what was your reaction?
You know, my initial reaction to it was one of horror. And I spent the first 36 hours or so at a level of stress not unlike, you know, one gets when they have to do public speaking or something. It was tremendously stressful to not know what was in my inbox, and to not know, to just be so in the dark about what I was missing. Other people initially, you know, were mad at me. I had a little bit of a role in the idea of this, and so I got some blame, and people were sort of upset. But what happened to me, and the epiphany that I sort of had after 36 or 48 hours. Was that I had actually tuned serendipity out of my life, and I'm a guy who likes to go to lunch by myself and sit at the bar and talk to a bartender and read the paper. And my life had changed a lot in the last couple of years, where I would go to the bar and sit and talk to the bartender and ruminate about whatever I was working on, and I'd have the newspaper there, but invariably I'd be sitting there looking at my smartphone because the news was more updated. I was getting RSS feeds, my Twitter account, basically all these things that I'd programmed. And now that week when I went to lunch, I brought a couple newspapers with me, and I found myself reading things and learning about things and thinking about things that I wouldn't have been thinking about otherwise because I had not programmed those subjects into my social networking feeds.
That's what a lot of defenders of doing it the old-fashioned way talk about, that you're looking at an article about something that you felt you had to read. And you notice out of the corner of your eye, there's this article on something that you never would have thought of, but it turns out to be fascinating.
It's true. And from our perspective, because, you know, we both acquire information and give it out, in terms of the giving out of information, when we use our social networks, when we use Facebook, when we use Twitter to report, we're looking for sources that way. Hey, do you know anybody? Do you know? You're very much reporting from a group of people who are probably like you, which is probably a disservice. Not probably, it is a disservice to our readers, because instead of calling around, instead of going out on the streets and talking to people, it's very easy to just fire up something on Twitter, fire up something on Facebook, and you are going to get a reaction from people who are like you. And you're not going to get the kind of, serendipity that you would get either reading the paper or reporting stories that others will read in the paper.
Now, Mark, since you proposed this, I wonder how much time you spend on the Internet when you're doing your job normally. And how often do you look at your BlackBerry or check your email during a workday? Or even worse, when you're doing something else, either in your car or... At a movie theater or at home before you go to sleep?
I do try to set boundaries, so I don't do it in the movie theater. But if you were to ask my kids, they would say that it's pretty much a constant presence and I need to get off it. And so it has really changed the nature of reporting and I think the nature of life. And so people who are in fields where they are equipped with a BlackBerry or an iPhone, it does tend, you know, the crackberry stereotype really is true. And especially in a field such as journalism where you're expected to be on and of the moment at all times. And so part of the genesis for this whole Unplugged project that we did was to say, well, let's take a step back. The kinds of stories we're supposed to be doing are supposed to look beyond the news of the moment. We're supposed to be the reporters who are looking days, weeks, months ahead and trying to figure out the trends and what's changing in our lives. So do we need to unplug to get back to that kind of a time frame? Because we're all caught up in this instantaneous time frame. And journalism is moving more and more in this direction. If you think about the ways in which journalism is trying to adapt to the online world, this whole field of search engine optimization, where news stories are chosen and crafted to fit what people are looking for on Google, that is redefining what news is in ways that are probably not very good for digging and figuring out and explaining the world to ourselves. So this was an attempt for us to sort of reset and say, okay, what's really valuable here? And I think we learned some lessons. Now, some people have gone right back to the way they were before, but Mike, for example, has sworn off some aspects of his extreme online life, and I think all of us are trying to retain some of the lessons we drew from that week. If only the absolute pleasure of having everybody in the office hanging around, talking to each other, standing up, and actually having face-to-face contact when they would have been sending electronic messages.
Now, we invite listener comments on our show page at WNYC.org. Yes, Mike.
What I was going to say is, you know, when Mark was talking about these communication patterns, when I was outside of my communication pattern with Mark, interesting things happened. So I know that Mark, just based on my experiences in getting emails from him or chatting online with him, is typically online around 11:30 at night, or between 11:30 and 12:30. And so if I had a question for him, I know pretty much to look for an answer around then, because that's his behavior pattern. I know what his behavior pattern is. I know what my wife's behavior pattern is. I know what my coworkers' behavior patterns are when they respond to messages. But when that wasn't like that anymore, when that was gone, I had to call him in the morning, or I had to figure out when he actually gets into the office so I could call him at his desk. And then I realized I didn't know his phone number at his desk. and so it was just incredible to me that life could be so easy in one respect, but so complicated in another respect.
Well, Mike, we got a comment from Frank in New York who writes, as a reporter, I find it's increasingly tough to get sources to talk on the phone. They prefer to interact via email. How do you deal with that? Although my experience in just trying to get information from people, I know that you get very different kinds of responses when you speak to them or when you're relying on email. Email tends to be terser, doesn't it?
It does tend to be terser, and you lose the ability to interact with the source in such a way that will cause the conversation to go in unexpected directions, which is almost always the most useful way that I like to go in a conversation. I when sources say to me, "Can we do it over email?" I absolutely just refuse. What I will do, and I have done, which I do find somewhat interesting, actually, if a source is really interested in writing, is to do instant messaging, where you can have a conversation back and forth more so than you can on email. Email feels really sort of definitive, whereas instant message chat, you can go back and forth. It reminds me of William Maxwell, the old great novelist and New Yorker fiction editor. Whenever he did an interview, he would sit at a typewriter. And the person would ask him questions and he would type his answers. It's not unlike that. I'm happy to have a person type answers if they think they're more coherent that way, but I want to have the give and take too.
But, you know, from a reporter's perspective, it's so important to have all the things that are going on outside of that typewriter or keyboard. And those kinds of visual cues, watching someone formulate an answer, the setting in which they're sitting. When I've taught high school and college kids in recent years about journalism and reporting, they're totally willing to go out and interview anybody on the planet by email. But when I ask them to go out and personally approach people on the street or set up an appointment and go see someone, they're much more reluctant to do that. And we're really running the danger in journalism of retreating to this place where the communication between reporter and source is that stilted, distanced kind of communication that happens electronically, where the control the source feels like they have more control, but the end result is a story that feels less natural and less real.
Now, Frank also wrote, I hope the Washington Post gave them 2 days off to catch up on all the email that piled up during the week. But isn't this, Mark, like those experiments where families try to go without TV for a week? They usually don't last. What happened to your staff?
The whole thing is an artificial construct, and we knew that going in. But I did think that most people would be able to go just 5 days without their electronic tether, and boy, was I wrong. The majority of the folks in our group gave up well before the end. Now, some of them had legitimate excuses. One reporter was working on a story about a cyber stalking case, which would be a very difficult story to report without going online. Another was working on a story about a dispute that started on a neighborhood listserv. Again, how can you report that story if you're not there reading what's going on the listserv? But aside from those legitimate excuses, people were cheating. People were caving in. They were really a little bit wussy about the whole thing because they were unable to detach themselves, not so much because of their work, but because of the pressures they felt from family and friends who were out there sending the messages and not getting a response. And the reporters were getting very nervous about losing their relationships.
On my Facebook profile, we're asking people if they think that they could do what you did, disconnect for a week. Many of them said that they would like to. They didn't say that they will. Are we really as tethered to email as we might imagine?
Oh, I mean, it's not only just the email, but to our phones in general. I wrote a story a few months ago looking at people's inability to separate themselves from their gadgets. And this happens with reporters as well. Invariably, the world around us is a lot less interesting often than what is in our hands, whether it be an interesting email, whether it be an interesting debate unfolding on Twitter. But it's a very narrow debate to be a part of. If you know, everybody, we're obsessed with Twitter as reporters and Facebook and all these sorts of things, but you have to think only 4% of the United States is on Twitter. So if you're in a debate on Twitter, that's a pretty narrow debate. So from my perspective, you know, thinking about those kinds of questions was really important as a reporter to understand that those things do have value, but there is an extreme limit to them.
My guests are Mike Rosenwald and Mark Fisher of The Washington Post. We're talking about going 5 work days without being connected to any of the things that have become so important in our lives, the internet, email, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. How did the experiment affect relationships with your friends, and your families?
Well, from my perspective, my wife and I, my wife is constantly on my back about my use of smartphones and whatnot. I have a 2.5-year-old son, and in instead of getting home and being on the iPad or whatever, I was on the floor with him instead. And it was a remarkable, you know, thing to think about. I put myself in his shoes and thinking, well, why is this guy always on this device? And what is that thing? And so that was good. She also rubbed it in my face a little bit. This was during the last, I think, week of Lost, the TV show Lost, where I like to follow the Twitter conversation to see what people are saying about it. And she sort of said, well, you know, we're watching. She says, well, I'm on my BlackBerry. I'm following this. You're not, you know, now you're the one without information. But what was really interesting was the emails in my inbox. We had all set up our inbox emails to sort of say if somebody emailed us, we'd get an automatic reply that said, I'm not the best way to reach me this week is by phone, right? And it was and it listed our phone number and everything. It was amazing how many people just ignored that, thinking there was just no possible way we were not going to be looking at email. And so people would continue emailing you, even though you said the best way to reach me is by phone. They still emailed over and over again. Hey, did you get my email? Hey, did you get my email? And every time they sent the email, they would get a response saying, call me. But they didn't call. And I finally tracked people down. I said, why didn't you just call me? And they're like, we just thought there was no way that you would not be checking your email.
Mark,
I just couldn't believe it.
Did you notice a difference in the way that your staff members related to each other in the newsroom that week?
Yes, and to my surprise, they didn't really notice it. Maybe it's just because I had I was attuned to it, but it was a dramatic difference. And people who ordinarily would be talking to each other nonstop electronically through our Washington Post internal message system or through email were actually getting up. And you know, part of it was that they were bored. They weren't able to. They didn't have all the distractions at their desk that they normally did. So in order to fill the time between phone calls, they would literally get up and walk around. Go to other people's cubicles, and I saw this happening in our own section of the newsroom, and they would go off in other parts of the newsroom. They went out to lunch together. They organized larger lunch groups than they normally would. It really changed the whole social dynamic, I thought, in a very healthy way. Maybe they got a little less work done, but they were connecting in ways that were really quite remarkable. And the same thing happened at home. You know, the stereotype is that it's the younger generation that's more plugged in, and we middle-aged folks don't quite get it. In this case, it was sort of the opposite. We have these very plugged-in reporters who went home, and it was their kids who totally embraced this whole project. We had one reporter who spent the week reading Huckleberry Finn to his 9-year-old son and snuggling with his 7-year-old daughter. We had a woman who sat down on the couch and where she and her husband would normally be on their devices separately for 3 or 4 hours in the evening while the TV was on. They actually deliberately set out to have a conversation, and they went ahead and did that, and they kind of enjoyed it. So
I was going to ask a different kind of question. How did the product change? Were the stories different that week?
You know, I don't think so. In part, because it was a limited stunt, we didn't get a really clean view of that. In part, people put off some of the reporting projects that where they really craved the internet. As I mentioned earlier, there were some stories that had a very important internet component to them, and they couldn't really be finished on time, so it actually delayed some of the work from getting done. But there were a couple of days where people went out on stories on the street where they might have otherwise done their work sitting at their desk, and I really believe that improves those stories dramatically, that readers can tell when you've been somewhere. And we're really fulfilling our part of the bargain with the reader when we take you to a place and introduce you to characters who you wouldn't get a chance to meet otherwise. And I think that really, it really behooves us to go out and have that contact be personal and in depth. And that's where we can deliver a real service.
Mike, isn't there some irony here? People say that the internet is killing newspapers, yet it sounds as though newspaper reporters are completely dependent on the internet. Are you dependent on the thing they may ultimately destroy your own industry?
It is deeply ironic. And I had that exact same thought as I was sitting there having lunch with my newspapers. I don't know how to reconcile that. I hope there are smarter people than me on higher floors in the building thinking about that issue. But yeah, we can't do our jobs as reporters, I'm convinced, without using the internet. But at the same time, more readers are reading our work because of the internet, and more readers are finding my ideas and finding my stories because of the internet than they would if the newspaper was just printed without any connection to the internet at all. So at some point we have to find a happy medium between the two things. And ultimately, you know, a lot of people think that the answer to our problems is a lot of the social networking, is, you know, is linking stories through Facebook and increasing the number of readers who are putting eyeballs on advertising. So we've got to learn to sort of coexist together. We can't do our jobs without it, and people can't get information without it. So,
and you can't do this alone, because if you call people, sometimes they don't, and leave a message, they don't return your call, but you email them and you get an email response almost immediately. So it's not just a matter of you changing your ways. It's a matter of the world changing its ways.
Yeah, it is. And being off the grid while other people are on the grid is tremendously challenging, in that I was trying to get a hold of a very smart.
Well, we got to lend it here. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'm so sorry. I've been talking with Mike Rosenwald and Mark Fisher of The Washington Post. It's been a real pleasure. Maybe we'll do a follow up on this.
Sounds great. Thank you.